Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I thought it was interesting how you discussed race over beer. That was the most important thing. Like, let's get the white dude and the black dude come to the White House and we'll have some beers over it. You know, like, it seems kind of ridiculous. Is it ridiculous? No, it's actually quite awesome.
We have all agreed that it is important to look forward rather than backward. Issues important to all of us will form the basis of discussions between Professor Gates and me in the days and weeks to come.
First was Daniel from Manhattan changing his mind in mid-soundbite about the beer summit, apparently on the takeaway this morning. Then Sergeant James Crowley at his news conference yesterday. You know, I thought it was symbolic that he held that news conference at the AFL-CIO, reinforcing the idea of this as a working white cop's class issue from his perspective, not just a race issue. And really interesting that he and Professor Gates plan to get together again without the president.
I would like not only to discuss, but I'd also like to listen to Professor Gates' perspective, and certainly he has the credentials to enlighten me a little bit, and I think that perhaps the professor, as he expressed to me, has a willingness to listen to what my perspective is as a police officer, and again, as I said in the statement, the difficult jobs that police officers do every day, so the professor was quite receptive to that.
So the very poised before the camera, Sergeant Crowley, saying Gates was receptive to the difficult job that police officers have to do. And without getting specific, he said Gates had things to say to enlighten him. And as for Professor Gates, he did not come out to the cameras, but he did issue a written statement, not getting as much press. That written statement said in part, "It is incumbent upon Sergeant Crowley and me," should have been I, right? Well, no, me is right. Okay. "It is incumbent upon Sergeant Crowley and me to utilize the great opportunity that fate has given us to foster greater sympathy among the American public for the daily perils of policing on the one hand and for the genuine fears of racial profiling on the other hand," unquote. So maybe they really are going to try to create a teachable moment beyond yesterday's photo op when they get together again. Let's talk about it with two guests and your phone calls. With me are Sherilyn Ifill, a civil rights lawyer, University of Maryland law professor, and author of The Courthouse Lawn, Confronting the Legacy of Lynching in the 21st Century, published by the Beacon Press in 2007. And Eugene O'Donnell, professor of law and police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, a former police officer and former prosecutor. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Professor O'Donnell, how'd they both do, in your opinion? Crowley in his news conference, Gates in his written statement.
They did well, very well. You have an emphasis on the human dignity aspect of this, and that should really be at the heart of policing, is to try to see the people behind the event. And similarly, I think it's important for people that encounter the police to try, as hard as it is when you're getting that seatbelt ticket or cell phone ticket, to try to see that officer as your surrogate wearing a uniform, but at the end of the day, a person just like you.
Sergeant Crowley seemed pretty media savvy for a beat cop, didn't you think?
He is. I mean, I think it actually turns out that there's, as is true in a lot of these conflicts, there may not be quite as much separating the two parties as it appears initially.
And listeners, did you watch the so-called Beer Summit coverage last night? What should Gates and Crowley do for their second act, since they are now promising one? And is this an issue of race versus class? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or anything else you want to say. If this is a teachable moment, what did you learn? Seriously, did you learn anything? Is this an issue of race versus class for you? And what should Gates and Crowley do for their second act, since they are now promising one? 212-433-WNYC. What can create meaning here for you and for people around the country? 212-433-9692, or post to our Facebook page or to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Professor Ifill, Sergeant Crowley did do this at the AFL-CIO, which I think was a statement of a class identification. And you wrote on theroot.com that there are still situations where race trumps class. So you also framed that conflict. Was this on one level about race versus class?
No, actually, Brian, I don't think there's actually a choice to be made between race versus class. I think that this is a question of race and class, because the reality is that for most young African-American men and boys, and they don't even have to be young, who have the kind of interaction with the police that Professor Gates had, the resolution, you know, is not the nation talking about it for a week, you know, press conferences, a meeting at the White House, beer, and a statement released, you know, on a blog that one founded. In fact, it's much more anonymous. And that's the class piece. This is playing out the way it is because of who Henry Louis Gates is. And so that's a good thing. So, you know, race doesn't trump class in that he can have the kind of encounter that he had, but class is important in whether or not you get heard. And so he's been heard in a way that I think hopefully in the future will provide some help for having other people who really don't have a voice to have the opportunity to be heard.
And since he's already said he'll make a PBS special, and there's, boy, talk about class privilege or individual privilege. Gee, he gets to have a network special to reflect his concerns about this. Sergeant Crowley doesn't get to have anything like that, nor do the anonymous young black man who you were just referring to. And I guess that's why you wrote in your Root article, which we should mention, the Root.com has Gates as editor-in-chief, that Gates needs to remember his relative privilege compared to the mostly young black males who'd find themselves in an encounter with a cop.
Right. I mean, I wrote the piece to you know, hearing that he intended to do a PBS special and knowing the kind of care and skill and production values that go into his PBS specials, I wanted to just, you know, give a word of caution that I hoped that when he did decide to put together this documentary, that it wouldn't be about the encounters of, you know, rich and famous or otherwise privileged black people with the police. Not that those encounters are to be diminished, but that instead he would do the PBS special using the voice and through the eyes of those for whom these are actually rather garden variety experiences. I live here in Baltimore City, and the relationship between cops and young black men, including young black men who are not criminals, is a quite tense one. And so I was hoping that when he puts together this PBS special, you know, over the past few weeks, many African-American professionals and famous people and even Colin Powell have talked about their experiences with racial profiling, and I'm glad that that's coming out so that people can see that race does trump class. But I still think the voice of the voiceless is the most important.
Professor O'Donnell, do you see a race-class thing here in another way? You know, there's been a lot of conservative commentary about how the liberal elite in the media miss the class aspect of this, and by that they mean white working-class aspect of this.
Well, you know, look, at the heart of all of this is the police, all these police controversies are political and policy questions, and you take a city like Philadelphia, which I use that when I'm teaching in my classes at John Jay, and I put the murder map up in Philadelphia. When I do that, the people gasp in my class because they cannot believe all the people that are murdered just in a given year in that city. And, you know, the African-American mayor in that city ran on a platform of aggressive stop and frisk. And when they did polling in that race, more African-Americans supported aggressive stop and frisk than even white, those in the white community. And so if you look at that map and you overlay the enforcement to where the people are being murdered, it's difficult for me to see how you wouldn't have disproportionate numbers of African-Americans stopped, questioned, and frisked. I do not mean to minimize it. I think one of the major issues that should come out of this is there's been a lack of understanding that arrest in a free society, detention in a free society, the crazy disorderly conduct statutes we have in a free society really diminish the country. We really need to recognize the crucial importance of arrest, but we also need to recognize this is a very complex issue. I think the poll that I saw indicated 3 out of 4 people did not agree with the president's criticism of the police. There's a very serious complexity involved with criminal justice reform, and if you think healthcare is broken, criminal justice is right up there in the broken category.
Steve in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Well, I'd like to follow up on the professor's point about law enforcement being broken. I mean, effectively, it is not catching the people who are committing the crimes in many respects. And I think in this respect, the summit did not work. And that is not going to fundamentally change the relationship between the black community and the police, and that indeed what happened to one of the lessons I gained is that what happened to Professor Gates would not happen to Al Sharpton. And, you know, you might say, well, they're in the same class, but I think that this was a message to the black folks who do have corporate credentials. You know, basically what happened to Gates could happen to them, and maybe it's time to step things up.
Professor Eiffel, you agree with Steve?
Well, I agree with Steve that if the summit is really limited to what happened last night, then it did not do much to advance what President Obama called the teachable moment. I mean, one of my concerns about the idea of the, you know, have a beer and sit down and talk, although I'm a huge proponent of conversation and of dialogue, is that it personalized something that, as Professor O'Donnell has suggested, you know, is very complicated and institutional. And I don't think there has been a moment in which I've heard the president, Professor Gates, or Officer Crowley begin to touch on the institutional dynamics. There is racism in the criminal justice system. It doesn't require, in order to know that that's true, to identify individual racists. You know, there are also black cops who can engage in racial profiling also because of racism embedded in the system. And so I haven't heard anything that goes to the structural problems in the criminal justice system. And if the summit is limited to that conversation last night and it doesn't go beyond, and I'm hopeful that hearing what Officer Crowley said and hearing what Professor Gates said in his statement, that they do intend to be leaders in having a broader and hopefully deeper conversation that'll get at some of those institutional issues.
Jocelyn in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. I believe that the issue of race and class are inevitably bound together. And I think that the more you peel back the layers of the onion, although it might make people cry, and the deeper you can get to the core of the matter, the more dialogue there will be and the more problems can be solved. So bringing forth these things to the light of day and continuing a dialogue is really essential. And I think that's very important. I'm glad this has happened.
All right. Thank you very much. So, Professor O'Donnell, what would you like to see them do in their second act? Apparently they're going to get together again, and it's unclear to me whether that's just going to be privately or whether they're going to try to do some kind of public event, at least on the local level in the Cambridge community that they share, or maybe even on the national level. I don't know.
Well, I'd like to see policy changes, actually, and I'd like to see political changes. I'd like to see legislatures cleaning up these absurd laws that are an open invitation to abuse. But unfortunately, what occurs too often is these hot-button topics come up. There's general agreement that we have a problem, but the problem in the country is not street cops. They're not the ones who create these conditions. They follow a military model, and they're quite good when they get clear direction and clear leadership and following that direction and leadership. To some extent, elected officials have to step up to the plate here and suggest reforms and be willing to take the hit in doing that. And to some degree, there's considerable evidence that they punt on this, and they hand this over to the cops and say, here, you go figure that out. And that really, for a nation that prides itself in being a nation that's, you know, when we follow the rule of law, what that allows inevitably is for cops to go out, because nobody can explain these laws, nobody understands these laws.
Do you mean like the disorderly conduct law that everybody's debating now, under which this arrest either was or was not legitimate?
Right. And that nobody could, you wouldn't get a consensus from four appellate court judges on these cases. If you gave 10 or 12 fact patterns to appellate court judges, they'd be all over the place in trying to determine whether these were legitimate arrests. You also have these absurd requirements that the cop, because the Charlie Cunningham law is about the public, it's not about the cop. So they have to note things like people looked annoyed and alarmed. What are they? They're face readers. They have to go look at the crowd. So perhaps when you have this early conduct law, maybe we should require the public, people in the public who claim they're alarmed and annoyed, to sign a statement to that effect, to come to court. If they're not willing to do that, maybe we shouldn't be doing this enforcement.
Professor Eiffel, how much do you agree?
Well, I agree that reform is absolutely necessary. I'm not sure it's simply cleaning up the statutes, though. I mean, we do have a problem with how the statutes are going to be construed and enforced. The Massachusetts statute does require that the person be outside and in the public. And if you read the police report in this case, there certainly is a case to be made that Officer Crowley was luring Professor Gates outside when the conversation was getting volatile inside his home. He could not have been arrested for disorderly conduct inside his home. So there are even aspects of the statute that still on the ground, will leave latitude for police officers to interpret. And that's where we really, where the rubber hits the road. And I wouldn't let the president off the hook either, even though many of these are local jurisdiction issues. He said early on, this is part of his portfolio, you know, the issue of race. And so I hope that he will exercise some leadership in this regard also. There are lots of ways the federal government can provide incentives to local police departments, financial incentives, frankly, to comply with certain kinds of rules and statutes and to provide certain kinds of training.
But here again, we should not be pushing this to the cops and the police departments. We're not going to be able to train our way out of this. This is a complex, long-standing problem, and it needs to be more leadership. And I fear the reason there's not more leadership is when legislators go and try to make these changes, public sentiment is against these changes. We are every day adding laws in the country that expand the responsibilities of the police, that give them more and more power, that overtax them. We dump things in their lap. And that is just a very bad way to do public policy.
So, Professor Eiffel, when you talk about what needs to be done in the future, are you leaning too much on the educating the police side? I mean, even Professor, even Professor Gates in his statement said to utilize this moment to, I'm trying to look for the quote here on the sheet, to foster greater sympathy among the American public for the daily perils of policing. On the one hand, as well as for the genuine fears of racial profile.
Right, but that's the point. I mean, I do agree with Professor O'Donnell on this point. What I'm suggesting is that in order to create the context in which the public understands what these issues, we're constantly talking about these issues and these matters, understands them from both perspectives, and doesn't try to over-rely on the police to solve some of these very complicated problems requires leadership. And that leadership, which can be the president as well as other elected officials, but those who have the public's trust, is to speak candidly and honestly about these issues from both of the perspectives identified in Professor Gates' statement, but to speak openly and candidly. And the problem that I see all too often is that public officials, elected officials who have the public's trust, will speak to the very hard job that the police do and the fact that we rely on them as we all do, but will not speak to and will not acknowledge the reality of race and class and the structural problems of racism and classism embedded in the criminal justice system, not just in policing. And criminal justice doesn't just mean the police.
From our comments page, a lot coming in. Seth writes, the Beer Summit was a pathetic PR stunt the White House dreamed up as damage control for Obama's police acted stupidly comments, which were clueless and totally irresponsible. Another one, Lynn Sweet's question reflected, this is the original reporter who asked the question at the news conference, reflected a very naive belief on the part of the Washington Press Corps that Obama's election would somehow usher in a dramatic improvement in race relations. Someone else, this beer summit idea is so typical of men. It reeks of thinking within the box. Alcohol may have been used to induce relaxation, but it may also be used to facilitate avoidance of the issues, ending in laughter, backslapping, and fake camaraderie with nothing changing in the end. And I don't know, you want to give me a quick one on that, Professor Eiffel?
I actually think the beer idea was selected to try and send a signal to the American people about the kind of conversation that it would be, and it was an attempt to give a signal about a certain kind of commonality. It was interesting to me, of course, that Professor Gates initially said he doesn't drink beer, which he doesn't, but obviously getting into the spirit of the thing, it was important.
And also maybe selected so Obama could be seen drinking a Bud Light, which is against the elite image. Professor O'Donnell, you wanted to say something about that?
I just want to say it softened the demonization that occurred in both extremes of this debate that should make us cringe, the attack on the integrity of Professor Gates, who has an extraordinary life story that's everybody should admire his accomplishment and the stature that he's achieved. But similarly, the demonization of the sergeant. Unless we accomplish some utopian vision in the next few years, we're going to continue to have cops. The real question we really need to ask is, are we going to have good cops or bad cops? if you're going to demonize all the cops, and I'm telling you there's been a lot of that conversation going on, what you're going to end up with is young people saying, why would I ever take this job? Why would I ever want to be part of this? If cops who are conscientious and decent, who are not there to bully and oppress people, are going to be criticized, that's going to hurt all of us in the long run.
Well, the Daily News called it the audacity of hops. That's where we will leave it with Sherrilyn Ifill, civil rights lawyer, University of Maryland law professor, and author of The Courthouse Lawn, Confronting the Legacy of Lynching in the 21st Century, and Eugene O'Donnell, professor of law and police science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, former police officer, former prosecutor. I am very interested to see where these two, without the president, try to take this publicly, and I guess we'll eventually find out. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in just a minute, the New Jersey Attorney General, Ann Milgram. She's suing Merrill Lynch and just got a settlement with one of those credit repair companies for fraud and going after the so-called Bloodettes drug gang, allegedly led by two women. I guess they're not doing that over beer, or maybe they are. Stay with us.